Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of thee.
But it's, in a way, it's time for him to retire, too.
And then today, this is deep in my heart because we have Portuguese in our family. Today is Brazilian Independence Day. It's when Brazil declared its independence in Portugal. Brazil came apart, was created because the Pope decided to split up the New World between the Spanish and the Portuguese. And Portuguese got Brazil, and the Spanish got the rest. And Brazil was the last country in the world to abolish slavery. There's still a lot of racism in that country, although most of the indigenous people have some black or African blood in them because there's been so much race mixing. But you never see, in the whole history of that country, there's never been a black who's been the president. So that's something they've got to work on. And then in boxing, the great John L. Sullivan James Corbett knocked out John L. Sullivan. And then for those of us who are in communications and media, Philo T. Farnsworth, who was a San Franciscan, he gave the first demonstration of TV back in 1927. So that's how far it goes back. And Farnsworth never really got all the credit that he deserved for all the hard work he did. And unfortunately, David Fowler, who knew him, who I worked with at KALW, and was the editor of the book Denial of Disaster about the San Francisco earthquake. Of course, that title can apply to a lot of other things that are going on. It's a title that applies to many things. So he knew Farnsworth before he died. And unfortunately, David Fowler died in September 2001. And one of the things that we're pushing, suggested to you, if you're concerned about the growing what I call damn reckless bicyclists, and we're seeing them all over in their demand for special rights, privileges, and exemptions, yet they don't pay for the roads or for special bike racks or for special lanes or maintenance. And it used to be when you were a kid, as I recall, the tricycle that we had a little warning bell on it, and sometimes it had lights in the back. None of these features around these bikes, on a lot of these bikes, there are a few at night, you see them if you're driving at night, but considering the cost of bicycles versus who pays, and that's the people who have auto insurance, when there's an accident involving a bicyclist and an automobile or a motor vehicle, oftentimes it's the motorist whose insurance company pays, and his or her rates go up. Whereas if the bicyclist causes an accident, generally they don't have insurance unless they have a coverage in their homeowner's policy. And we'll get into that another day. It's something that's not well known, that if you're a homeowner, you have a homeowner's policy or an apartment policy, you can have some kind of coverage for accidents with bicycles. Excuse me. Still getting over that cold. But we'll get into that since I was in the field and brings back old memories. Excuse me. Go to YouTube, Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas, YouTube, and that's our video Verite magazine. It's eclectic. We've got a lot of different topics up there from military history, public corruption, pedophilia in the schools, practical tips for survival, such as how to mail a letter and make sure it gets there when it absolutely positively has to get there. Things that we pass on, and how to detect counterfeit bills. Now, yesterday was Labor Day, and of course we can thank people like Samuel Gompers and John L. Lewis of the coal miners, Samuel Gompers of the Garment Workers Union. Back at the turn of the 19th century, these people these union leaders did work to improve the conditions of the American working man and woman. Women were, a lot of women were abused in the garment industry, and maybe still are, especially among these Chinese sweatshops. And that's another scandal that media has not paid attention to or ignore because politicians are involved. But I came across a case at a major food retailer, looked at the guy's name tag and said, "Are you related to?" And he said, "Yes, that's my granduncle." So I said, "Are you happy working here in a non-union shop?" And he says, "Yes. Well, we're seeing we may be seeing more and more of this, that if a non-union shop provides benefits and treats their workers equitably and has good product and treats the customers fairly and resolves issues in a quick and fair manner, people don't give a damn if it's a union shop or not. And this guy, intelligent guy, college degree, couldn't get a job in the degree, the field that he worked in, so went to work for this food retailer, and he's quite happy. And, he respects the memory of his great uncle, but he's not union, and he doesn't want to be union, and he doesn't give a damn about, I shouldn't say he doesn't give a damn, but he could care less as long as his rights as a human being, as somebody in the labor market, and as an employee of this corporation, it's a major, it's now international, food retailer. Other people probably recognize the name tag as well, but I'm not going to bring it up on here. But that's what's going on there. Now, Meg Whitman, who wants to be, who really revved up eBay, of course there's some controversy about it, but she's a sharp woman. I think she's Roman Catholic. I disagree with her on gay marriage and a few other things. But maybe it's time to put a woman in the Capitol as governor of the state of California. We've got this political rethread, Jerry Brown, who left Oakland in the mess, and all he's been in, with the exception of the time that he was studied to be a Jesuit priest and then dropped out or was dumped out, I don't know which. His only claim to fame is that his father was a state attorney for his city and county of San Francisco, and he wasn't good at that. And he was governor of the state of California, and he blew that. In fact, I remember in 1965 when Ronald Reagan ran against Pat Brown. Brown was out of the state when the Watts riots occurred, and the lieutenant governor was a guy named Glenn Anderson. He fumbled around, didn't know what to do, and so there was an unholy mess down in L.A., and a lot of controversy. People were injured, and of course that was one of the long hot summers in American history. But I remember the bumper stickers, which said, "If it's Brown, flush it." And I wouldn't be surprised if these appear today. Of course, it's become more expensive to use water, so that's a pun. But anyway, I think people are tired of these rethread politicians. You know, you can't buy rethread tires anymore, but we're being offered rethread politicians who make a career out of public office and really don't accomplish much except to build up their pension rights. But given the way that they've run their previous experience in government, it's a wonder that there's any pension fund left for anybody. So, but anyway, Meg Whitman has proposed something that a lot of people are tired of trying to get the law enforcement to deal with, and that is public corruption. And she's proposed a statewide grand jury where citizens can bring complaints to this grand jury. They'll investigate them and then refer them to the district attorney in the county jurisdiction where the alleged crimes against the government have occurred, whether it's graft, public corruption, bribery, whatever. Of course, the career attorneys are opposed to it, and Jerry Brown typically waffles, but, part of the problem is that complaints have been brought to his office, and he has done nothing and will do nothing because he doesn't want to offend his political supporters. So he should just quietly go away. You know, old politicians never die. They should just fade away, some of us are beginning to think. So this might be an idea whose time has come. Also, there is and has been on both the federal statutes and the state statutes a thing called QUITAM, which is a citizen can bring to the attention of federal or state law enforcement. There are two different QUITAMs. Where a program is being ripped off or there's money not accounted for, and what happens is the government, in the federal level, the government has 30 days to decide. It has to be filed under seal. You can't broadcast it. And they have 30 days to decide whether they're going to take over the case, and they'll investigate and then decide if there's an action to be done, that should be done. They can take over the case, and then you get 25% of any recovery, or they can just turn it over to you and you hire your own attorney. This is the one case that there you have to use a licensed attorney. You can represent yourself in a murder case, a divorce case. It may not be a good idea if you don't know what you're doing or you feel uneasy about it. But, I mean, and in habeas corpus, you do not need a lawyer, but you should have one, especially if it gets complicated. But as I've always said, some of the best lawyers are behind bars. Some of the worst ones should be. We won't name names just yet. Excuse me. So that's on the books. The QUITAM is a federal and a state one. It's can get complicated, but a lot of money has been recovered for the government by citizens who have pursued these avenues of holding government recipients, especially of contracts, accountable. And then the other thing is, you hear a lot about these polls these days. And I remember the classic poll gap in Gallup was in 1948 when they had Tom Dewey elected president. And there's that classic photo of Harry Truman holding up the Chicago Tribune, which was run at the time by Colonel Robert McCormick. I never met him, but I'll discuss at a later date a fascinating story about him and his museum out in suburban Chicago. Anyway, they had Dewey wins, and Harry Truman's holding up this, and of course, he's tickled pink that he had really won one of the closest elections in American history. And then Gallup goofed again in the Gerry Ford Carter presidential campaign, where he had Gerald Ford winning the presidency, running re-election, excuse me. Goofed on that. And then here's the question that people should ask. I've raised this issue with such outfits as Field and never got a response, is who chooses the people to be called or to be polled? Who pays for the polling? Who checks the accuracy of the polling that's done? And how can a concerned citizen, since these are supposed to influence our voting or to give us information as how the rest of the country or constituency feels, who checks on the results of the polling? Is polling accurate? Is it honest? Is it ethical? I think these are the questions that you should ask if you are concerned. Now, one of the polls here in outfits here in California, Field, was set up, it turns out, by the media back in the late 40s. And I'm suspicious about that because it seems to have a lot of, they do their polling in the liberal areas of California, San Francisco and Santa Monica and Southern California. And, this is a big state, over 30 million people. So, they're telling us that, we told 1,500 people. Well, that doesn't represent, that's not representative of the state, especially in the districts that they said they did their polling. And I can never get any answer out of them. Other people have raised the same issue about is that particular outfit honest? And it's particularly suspect because if the media set it up, then I understand this is the accusation that if you spend $200,000 with this group, you'll get the results you're looking for. So you get your money's worth. So, but the public gets shortchanged. Getting back to the bicycle thing, there are states that do have require bicycles to be licensed. And, yes, you should share the road, but they should shoulder some of the responsibility. This whole idea of, me, and what I want, and hell with everybody else, and I have special rights, privileges, and exemptions, enough of this. So, and if these bicyclists are forced to be licensed and to pay a tax, a license fee like automobiles, then maybe they'll be more responsible because they do injure people too. And they do cause accidents, and they don't really contribute to the economy with the exception of the bicycle messengers who have a very rough job. So I don't buy that argument that bicyclists contribute to the economy. And another factor is American cities, especially big cities like New York, Chicago, even San Francisco with all its hills. The topography does not support a massive bicycling. And incidentally, you've heard the term critical mass. Well, that originated back in 1992 here in San Francisco. I didn't know it, so we'll bring up more on that. I've had a request to replay the Russian media person, Valerie, on why Russian dogs aren't fed Purina. So here goes.
Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul. Welcome to Animals and Ideas. Today, my guest is Valerie Ferguson, who is an emigre from the Soviet Union. She's now living in San Francisco, and she's going to give us her perspective. She was formerly in the media also in the Soviet Union. She's going to give us her perspective on animals in the Soviet Union. Welcome to the Animals and Ideas, Valina.
Hi.
No, never grab the microphone.
Oh.
Okay. Welcome to Animals and Ideas, Valerie.
Good morning, Peter Paul.
Valerie, when you were in the Soviet Union, what kind of animals, what kind of pets? Like, are there borzois, German shepherds? What do the Russian people have as pets?
All kind of dogs, all kind of cats, and birds.
Birds in the Soviet Union?
Even birds.
What kind of birds?
Parrots, singing birds.
Now, I think it's in Tolstoy, or at least in the movie version of War and Peace, we saw borzois hunting wolves. Do the Russians use their dogs today to hunt?
Yes, if they live in the country. But very few borzoi left in Russia.
Why is that? Is that because it's a royal dog?
Yes, they're very tender. They're very susceptible to all kinds of diseases. They're very tender dogs.
Oh, you mean they're sensitive?
Yeah, they are.
What about cats? What kind of cats do the Russians like? Like Siamese or what?
They have Siamese, domestic cats, and we don't have Persian cats.
You have alley cats in Moscow?
Oh, sure. We have plenty of them.
What do they feed them?
They eat on the garbage, or people leave them some food, and there's plenty of food for the cats in the alley in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was talking to an Australian journalist, and she said that she notices less animals in American cities. Now, do you have the same perspective since you lived in the Soviet Union? Do you think we have less animals in our urban areas?
Yes, indeed you do. We have more animals. They allowed in all the apartment buildings, in all
houses. Animals, dogs, cats,
yes,
and
dogs, cats. They allowed everywhere. You can have two or three. Only if your neighbors object when you have too many, or they make noise.
They bark at midnight.
Sometimes.
What happens? Do you get a knock on the door from the police?
Yes, there was one case when my neighbor went to jail because of it.
A barking dog?
No, he bought a policeman. They tried to break in her door, and the dog...
If you can't have a pet, huh?
No, not at all. You can have two or three of them if they don't violate the house rules. And
you mean like run up and down and bite?
Yes.
Now, if a dog continually bites somebody or the cat scratches somebody, would they be, would they get the dog taken away or, you know, what would happen?
They would take him to veterinary clinic for observation.
So that's mandatory in Russia?
Yes. And the owner... No, the victim can sue the owner.
Oh, really?
Or even can get dog destroyed.
Ah, that's kind of unusual because people really fight. Do they really have these many problems though with urban pets in Russia?
No.
So it's pretty well regimented, huh?
No, but the last news I heard, the government made the owners of the dogs, especially, pay a tax, $100 a year.
You mean of certain types of dogs?
All dogs.
$100 a year?
$100 a year.
What would that translate into rubles? How many rubles would that be?
Well, it would be like 100 rubles or equivalent.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to pay to have an animal?
Yes, because of the food shortage.
Now, what do the Russian dogs eat? We didn't ask that.
The Russian dogs eat what their owners eat. We don't have a dog food.
No dog food, no Purina
no
or Alpo.
Food. They eat very wholesome meals, and the owners are cook for their dogs.
Mm-hmm. So they eat a lot of borscht, huh?
They eat a lot of meat, they eat fruits, vegetables. Mm-hmm. The dogs is very good in Russia.
So they're healthier than a lot of American pets, huh?
Yes, I can say so.
Valerie, thanks for being on Animals and Ideas.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We're speaking to Valerie Ferguson, who is a Russian emigre who was formerly in media herself in Moscow. She's now living in the United States. This is Peter Paul for Animals and Ideas. Thanks for listening.
Well, we thank you for listening, and we had a cable problem. Somebody yanked something, and fortunately got it connected back in time. So we'll resume programming on Friday. We'll have some more interviews and some more interesting things. And go to our YouTube site, AMICUSPERITAS, YouTube. And we have the beginning of our series on damn reckless bicyclists and what you can do about it, what you should do about it if you're interested in it, especially if you've witnessed or been a victim of a bicyclist. Or if you've been a bicyclist who's been injured because the rules of the road affect you too. So this is Peter Paul Brizola. I don't know what they're doing with that bloody cable. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Friday at 5 o'clock.